Coming up next on the Holistic Wealth Podcast.
Recording, you know, your bikini wax on social media, right? Like, this is not vulnerability, okay? That's just like too much information, all right? Vulnerability is always about creating a more genuine connection with the humans around us, with the humans in our lives. And if the vulnerability that you're expressing is not genuine, then you are not creating deeper connections with people around you. You know, seeing your bikini wax does not make me feel closer to you.
You're listening to the Holistic Wealth Podcast with host Keisha Blair, author of Holistic Wealth and founder of the Institute on Holistic Wealth. And now, here's your host, Keisha Blair.
Today, we have a very special guest with us. We have Dr. Taryn Marie Stasekill. And Dr. Taryn is the founder and chief resilience officer of Resilience Leadership Institute. She is recognized as the number one international expert on resilience, mental health, and well-being in both leadership and in life. Her mission is to positively impact the lives of 1 billion people by enhancing hope, healing, and health, as well as increased consciousness and enhanced leadership through the practices of resilience. She also serves as the chief product officer and the chief happiness officer for Wicked Happy, a global international apparel brand that promotes positivity and possibility through inspirational messages. Her book entitled The 5 Practices of Highly Resilient People, Why Some Flourish When Others Fold is a number one Wall Street Journal bestseller. And she is recognized by global gurus worldwide and is a top 30 thinker in leadership. Dr. Taryn Marie, welcome to the show. We're delighted to have you here.
Oh my goodness. Thank you for having me. It is such a delight and a pleasure and an honor to be here.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to start with your personal story, because I know you've come to this topic of resilience through your personal experience and having to go through CPTSD, which is, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder for those listening in. I think, you know, with growing up with dyslexia and a number of different challenges. So I'll let you take the floor in terms of highlighting how, you know, your personal experiences has shaped your work.
You know, one of the things for us to all appreciate about resilience and mental well-being is that first and foremost, we all have stories of resilience. You know, there's not a single person, there's not a single human on this planet that's like, nope, I haven't really experienced any challenge, right? Now, there's people that have experienced greater challenge, you know, lesser challenge, comparatively speaking, right? And any challenge that we experience is important and meaningful for us. And so we all have resilience stories. And you pointed out so beautifully, Keisha, that I have mentioned a couple of my resilience stories in my book. And one of the things that has been so powerful for me is to actually get to share these stories with the world, to allow them to go outside of me and beyond me and to become bigger than I am and to speak into people's lives. And one of those stories is the story of, in first and second grade, I was in the lowest reading group. And I'm looking around thinking, what's going on? Like, why am I here? And so by third grade, I was like, look, I see more for myself. And I went to my teacher and I told her, and within the first week of school, I said, Mrs. Robinson, I am going to be in the highest reading group by the end of the semester. Now, she gave me that skeptical look that I pretended not to see. And every day in class, I wrote down the words that I couldn't pronounce or that I didn't know how to say or spell. And every night I went home in my bedroom and I studied those words and I practiced them and I memorized them and I figured out really how to read and write the words that I could not say or spell. And sure enough, by the end of that semester, I had ascended not one, but two reading groups to be in the highest reading group. Now, 30 years later, I got to understand why learning was so difficult for me early on. And at the age of 37, after I'd completed all of my formal education, my doctorate degree, my fellowships in neuropsychology, I was diagnosed with dyslexia and ADHD. for that matter. And what's powerful about this story is that we all, as I said, have stories of resilience. There's this universality of that. And so while each of us have a story that's unique to them, and that's my unique story, we all have stories of recognizing that we want more for ourselves, looking around and saying, I'm not in the right place where I want to be, to say, I want to get better. I don't necessarily know how. To say that out loud to people around us and to have them give us a skeptical look, you know, and then ultimately through our own grit and determination alone in our bedroom or wherever to make that a reality. And my mission around resilience and the five practices of highly resilient people, where I've interviewed hundreds of people and I've collected thousands of pieces of data, is so that nobody has to be alone in their bedroom or in their car or wherever trying to figure out how to face a challenge in their lives. That we can all have a blueprint that gives us the roadmap to be able to effectively face challenge.
So that was so powerful. And so I wanted to talk about the book, because in the book you mentioned those five practices of highly resilient people. Could you just highlight for us what those five practices are? Because I know everyone's dying to hear what those five practices are and why they're so powerful.
We won't have time today to really unpack, you know, all five of those practices. What I can teach you is an overview of a couple of the practices. So let's talk about what are those five practices, give you a high-level definition. And then we can dive a little deeper maybe into one or two of the practices in the time that we have today. So at a high level, the five practices of highly resilient people are the five things that I found in interviewing hundreds of people and collecting thousands of pieces of data that allow us to effectively face these inevitable moments of challenge, change, and complexity. Now, it's not if these things are going to show up in our life, if challenge is going to arrive, it's when. And when it does, we get to be prepared. And so one of the things that I like to say is no one learns to swim in a flood, right? Like that, like, you know, it's like all of a sudden we don't just learn like, okay, like here's how I float on my back. It's about taking swimming lessons and it's about being able to practice a series of skills so that when we get to that moment, we have that capability. And facing challenge is no different. So the powerful thing about the five practices, and the word practice is intentional because we get to practice this skill set in advance of the inevitable moments of challenge. And so the five practices that I found, first and foremost, is the practice of vulnerability. This is our first practice. And vulnerability means something different than most of us think it does. So there's people out there teaching that vulnerability is about putting it all out there, TMI, you know, live recording, you know, your bikini wax on social media, right? Like this is not vulnerability, okay? That's just like too much information, all right? Vulnerability is always about creating a more genuine connection with the humans around us, with the humans in our lives. And if the vulnerability that you're expressing is not genuine, then you are not creating deeper connections with people around you. You know, seeing your bikini wax does not make me feel closer to you, right? So vulnerability is about allowing our inside self, our thoughts, feelings, and emotions, what's happening on the inside, to match the outside self that we're sharing with the world. And that is true vulnerability. The second practice of particularly resilient people is the practice of productive perseverance. This is about knowing when to maintain the mission in the face of challenge, and knowing when to pivot in a new direction in the face of diminishing returns. So a lot of people ask me, you know, do resilient people ever quit anything? They sure do. We all pivot or make a new goal in the face of diminishing returns. And there's also moments where resilient people get really gritty, in the words of Angela Duckworth, and continue forward, you know, even in the face of challenge. Now, the third practice is the practice of connection. And the practice of connection is also twofold. First and foremost, it's about the connection that we have with ourselves. the connection that we have deep inside, knowing our strengths, our value, listening to our inner voice, trusting our gut, appreciating our own intuition. And then the second part of this is the connection that we have with others outside of ourselves, right? And so connection is also very much about what we do at the intersection of the relationship that we have with ourselves and the relationship that we have with others, and what we do when that is aligned and what we do when that is at odds. Now, the fourth practice is the practice of gratiosity. The practice of gratiosity is a hybrid word that I made up to demonstrate what I was hearing from all of these people that I interviewed. It's gratitude and generosity. So what I was hearing is that people were saying, you know what, when I faced a challenge, after some time, I was able to see the good in that challenge. Even if I wouldn't have chosen it, I was able to see how I was formed, what I got out of it, who showed up for me, you know, all those things, what I learned. Then generosity is about generously sharing our resilient stories with the world. It's generously sharing the challenges that we have faced, like the story that I told you about my own dyslexia, because when we do that, two important things happen. First, we solidify our own resilience, our strengths and skills and talents. In those moments when we say, how am I ever going to get through this? Looking back and telling the story, we're like, oh, wow, like I didn't know I had that strength. I didn't know I had that capability. And in telling our resilient stories, we do, in my mind, what is one of the most profound things we can do as humans relative to our own healing. And that is to take whatever darkness we experienced inside of a challenge and to turn that into a light that we shine on other people's pathways. So when we tell our resilient stories generously, we're essentially giving other people a guide on their own journey. And so we take all that darkness and we allow it to become a light that, you know, illuminates the pathway of people that are coming up behind us with a similar challenge. And the fifth practice is the practice of possibility. And possibility is about focusing on progress, not perfection. And it's about evaluating sort of the interplay that exists in a moment when we face challenge, which is risk and opportunity. And people that effectively demonstrate the practice of possibility are able to effectively evaluate both the risk and the opportunity of the moment. If we over-index on risk, we subscribe to fear, we subscribe to failure, we subscribe to frustration. And if we over-index on opportunity, we're like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. You know, we might miss, right, the pitfalls or the sort of potential for disaster. So anytime we're evaluating possibility, it's about both looking at what are the risks and what are the opportunities and to do that effectively in the face of challenge.
Yeah, and those are so amazing because I feel like even the concept of holistic wealth, some of the concepts there are so aligned and so similar. And as you know, like my personal story and how I came on this journey of holistic wealth has been through all of those five practices. In terms of vulnerability and every single one. So I just wanted to ask you if we could, as you said, highlight two, vulnerability. And as you said, there's so much misunderstanding about that and why it's so important for resilience. And then if we could do that one and the last one that you mentioned, you know, just to give the audience a sense of those two and how they can use them further in impacting, you know, and growing, they're building their resilience muscles. That would be amazing.
It's like, well, let's start with vulnerability. So I talked about the importance of genuine vulnerability. So what I found is that there's really two types of vulnerability. There's genuine vulnerability and there's performative vulnerability. And genuine vulnerability is really about like, how can I share something vulnerable or authentic with you so that we can create a deeper connection with one another? Right? Performative vulnerability is about reputation management. It's about, let me tell you something about me so you think a certain thing about me. Also, for a long time, we've thought that vulnerability was like self-deprecation, you know, self-degradation, you know, let me put myself down before anybody else notices this. Like we're still in middle school, right? You know? So that's not vulnerability. As I mentioned, vulnerability is about allowing our inside self, our thoughts, feelings, and experience to match the outside self that we share with the world in service of creating deeper human connections with others. Now, I don't think there's a person out there who hasn't, on some level, in some moment, ever felt a little bit afraid about, you know, getting vulnerable with other people. It's scary. And, you know, I was looking at some of the writings of like in work of Brené Brown and other people and, you know, who also found vulnerability to be important in their work. And so I'm thinking to myself, you know, we know vulnerability is good for us. Why aren't we all doing it? Why aren't we all running around living our most fabulous vulnerable lives, right? And so I asked people that I was interviewing this question, you know, like what gets in the way of your ability to demonstrate that genuine sense of vulnerability? And what I heard from people is what I now call the vulnerability bias. And the vulnerability bias says that if a voice in our head, right, that says, you know, okay, we want to be vulnerable. The voice is like, no, don't do that. Please don't be vulnerable with those people. And we're like, why not? It's like, well, if you allow yourself to be truly seen and known, the voice says, the three L's will occur. People won't like you. They won't love you. And so that keeps us from really stepping out in the truth of who we are. And so one of the things that we get to do in the context of the practice of vulnerability is to recognize when we're hearing that voice, when we're hearing, you know, the three L's that are making us afraid that people won't like us, they won't love us, and they might leave. And then we get to be able to challenge that irrational fear and to really evaluate if that's true. And that's one of the ways that I've just been so excited to share more about what vulnerability truly is and how we express it and to claim new ground, right? In this book, The Five Practices of Highly Resilient People, beyond, you know, what's been contributed today by other people like Brené Brown.
And I loved your concept too of risk and opportunity and that imbalance there that can exist. We did an episode on ADHD with Coach Brooke Schnittman some time ago, and she mentioned her adult onset ADHD. And I feel like within the context of risk and reward for us in general, like it tends to be somewhere of an imbalance. And I'm sure many people, you know, experience that. So I'm wondering what your advice would be in terms of having that balance and really assessing appropriately the risks and reward, especially when, you know, some of us are more prone to taking on more risk. Some of us are more risk averse, and some of us get really anxious when it comes on to even taking a small risk. I talk a lot about the personal financial identity framework that I developed and with these money personalities. And it's amazing how people view risk, and especially when it comes on to money and assessing opportunities. And so that's why this is so interesting for me. So I'd love to hear your perspective on all of that, because I think for so many of us, having that balance and knowing really how to assess and how to pivot, I think that's where a lot of people struggle.
So when it comes to the practice of possibility and effectively facing challenge, what I found is that a big part of being able to appropriately assess risk and the accompanying opportunity really comes from recasting our relationship with fear. And society has told us for a long time that we ought to be fearless. And I'm teaching that it's not about being fearless. It's about learning to fear less. So I don't think we want to kill our fear. I don't think we're ever going to be in a position where we are truly fearless, nor should we be, right? But the practice of possibility is about renegotiating our relationship with fear and really understanding this emotion. And being someone who's dyslexic, what I've realized is the word scared and the word sacred are essentially the same word, just with a C in a different place. So then I got to thinking, Well, what if in the wisdom of the English language, it's not about feeling fear and either killing the fear or running in the opposite direction? What if we get to look at the things that truly scare us, true abundance, stepping into the full complement of our strength, sharing our talents with the world, saying out loud what we really want, no longer playing small, really going for the things that we want, all the things that scare us, rather than seeing fear and that experience of feeling scared as a reason to not do it? What if we said to ourselves, the presence of fear signals that this may just be one of my most sacred opportunities for development and growth?
Absolutely. And Terry, you set up the Resilience Institute. And can you tell us about some of the work with the Institute? Because I think that's amazing in and of itself. I know you've done with work with organizations, getting in there, talking to people in different teams. Can you tell us about some of the work that you've been doing there?
Yeah, absolutely. So I founded the Resilience Leadership Institute 4 years ago, based on this research that I've been doing for 20 years. And the five practices of highly resilient people. And so today, you know, we work with organizations, with conferences, with summits, with gatherings for women and men on motivational and inspirational keynote speaking on the five practices, the facilitation and training of workshops to allow individuals, leaders, teams, organizations to be more resilient. We offer executive and group coaching, and we also have a number of digital offerings as well for people that are all over the country and all over the world. One of them is our Flourish course. And so our Flourish course allows people to get direct training and coaching with me in modules that we, you know, record in a sound studio out in Los Angeles, California. So it's really high quality video and coaching. And it's a course that allows people to really go beyond, you know, what you might be reading in the book and the five practices of highly resilient people, and to essentially study with me and to more effectively face the challenge that are occurring in people's lives in service of allowing people to unlock their full potential, to fear less, to have an opportunity to go after greater wealth, greater health, the relationships that they want. And that has been such a powerful way that we've gotten to connect with people all over the world and speak into their lives.
Absolutely. And there's a concept that I know you developed. It's the concept of the reverse bucket list. And it was so, you know, when I saw it, I'm like, yeah, I love that concept.
One of the things that I realized is that in the context of resilience, we also get to reevaluate our relationship with challenge. And what we get to know about challenge, change, and complexity is that these things are inevitable parts of our lives. It is the fabric of what it means to be human. These things aren't going away. We can't engineer them out of our lives. And frankly, we actually don't want to, because these are the moments where we have the greatest opportunity to amplify our learning, our wisdom, our empathy, our compassion, to really appreciate and understand our strengths and talents. And so when I think about the concept of the reverse bucket list, you know, we all know what a bucket list is. It, you know, the pleasurable things we want to do on this planet while we're still here. And when I had the opportunity to do some of those things, I was like, okay, this is great. You know, I love this. And it's really the moments of the three C's, the challenge, change, and complexity, that has dramatically impacted my life and formed me into who I am today. So I got to thinking, let's recast our relationship with challenge. And so the reverse bucket list is all of the things, you know, if the bucket list is all the things we want to do, the reverse bucket list is all the things we didn't want to do. It's the crises, the medical diagnoses, the disappointments, the loss, the not getting the thing that we wanted, falling short of our goals, you know, all of those things, the rejections, you know, the hurt, the fear. And what we get to do in the context of the reverse bucket list is to look at, you know, what was this challenge that we faced? And rather than seeing challenge as something that, you know, is not helpful in our lives, to actually see how challenge is deeply helpful in our lives and how we have been formed immensely by the challenge. So I take people through an exercise where they have the opportunity to reflect on, a challenge that they have faced and how that challenge has formed them to be able to reevaluate our relationship with challenge.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And so I think this has been tremendously helpful. And can you tell everyone where to find you in terms of finding you on social media, your website, all of that good stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I would love for folks to jog on over to Instagram if you tend to hang out there. I am Dr. Dr. Taryn, T-A-R-Y-N, Marie, M-A-R-I-E. It's my handle on Instagram. We're coming up close on 300,000 followers, which is so exciting. And we've got a lot of offerings and content there on Instagram that you can connect with. And if you're interested in learning more about the Flourish course, you can send me a direct message on Instagram with the word flourish, and we'll be sure to add you to how you can access that course and learn more about a direct opportunity to do that type of training and deep work with me.
Awesome. And, you know, it was so amazing having you here today to talk about this. Hopefully we can follow up with another episode later on down the line. It'd be great to have you back on the show. So thank you so much for being here and imparting, you know, those insights from the book and your work with the Institute. It's been a pleasure having you here.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor and a delight to be here with you.
The Holistic Wealth Podcast with Keisha Blair is brought to you by...
Have you joined the Institute on Holistic Wealth? If you haven't already, what are you waiting for? Choose your membership plan at the Institute on Holistic Wealth /memberships to join. As a member, you'll get access to free worksheets, advice, coaching, and an intentional design workshop. As you start to live a more holistically wealthy lifestyle, you'll want to stay for a very long time. So go to Institute on Holistic Wealth /memberships to join. If you haven't read the book yet, pick up a copy of the award-winning best-selling Holistic Wealth 36 Life Lessons to help you recover from disruption, find your life purpose, and achieve financial freedom.